Okay, we'll begin the third chelik of the Haggadah today. On the Shela Tam Mahu Omer Mazos. So the Tam, son, the simpleton, they call him, he asks, what Mazos, what's this? And Vamar Telav, you tell him, Chosekeru, Chotzianu, Hashem Yitzrayim, Beis Avedi. So he asked the Chura, what's wrong with the Tam? He's asking, Mazos, what's this? Whatever, he doesn't know what's going on. So he said, L'chura, why is that much different than the Chacham? What was the Chacham? He also doesn't know. He says, Ma, idus v'chukim mishpatim. You know, I don't know, what is this? Can you explain to me? I don't know. And what does the Tam say? Mazos. I don't know. So they're both saying, I don't know. So why is he called the Chacham and he's called the Tam? So he answered with a mashal, which I've heard before in a little different context. He brings it, there was a group that went to take a siur, like a tour of a nuclear power plant. Okay, and there's one here in Dimona, right down south. So this group was going on a thing. So so the one giving them the tour, you know, met them at the gate and says, okay, everybody has to get dressed on these white robes or whatever, and nobody's allowed to talk or say anything during the thing. We're just going to go show you around, whatever. We'll take questions later. Fine. So they go from one room, then go to another room, and then they get to this room with a whole bunch of different pipes and nozzles and this and all kinds of things. And they go to another room with these big, huge containers. Anyway, so they finish the tour. They come out, and the guy that gave the tool, he says to them, "Okay, any questions?" So two people put up their hands. So the first guy puts up his hand and he says, you know, very nice, took us around and everything, but like, what was all of that we saw? Can you please explain all these different things? I don't know, what does all these things? So, okay, and he said, before he answers that, he says, and what was your question? Asked the second guy. So the second guy says, I noticed in the third room that we went to, there was this lever there, and a little red lever, like in the corner there, attached to the pipe. What's that red lever for? So the guy thought to himself, you know, the guy was taking him around, he says, the first guy is a Chacham, second guy is a Tam. Why? He says, the first guy, okay, he doesn't know what's going on. So he wants to know, what is all of this? Okay, fair question. You don't know. You want to find out. Good question. But the second guy, what's that red lever? Meaning, that you didn't know, that you didn't understand, you understood everything, and understood all these, every other nozzle, every other thing, and all the things that we saw, everything you understood, you just know what that one lever is for. That's a ridiculous question. First guy, okay, didn't know anything. He said, I don't know anything, 100%. But what, you, why is this lever for? Can you do everything else you do understand? That's a Tom. Right, he says the same thing. Over here, right? The Chacham asks, okay, he doesn't know. I don't know. Please explain me all of this. 100%. That's a valid question. What does the Tom said? Mazos. What's this? This thing, particularly thing I don't understand. What? And everything else you do understand? So that's a Tom. Say then the pasuk ish bar lo yeda. Ish could be a lashon chashivas. Can be a guy, he's a chashiva guy, but lo yeda, he doesn't know. Okay, yeah, you don't know everything. That's fine. But uksil lo yavin et zos. What's a ksil, a fool? He said he doesn't understand this one thing. What's this thing? And everything else you do understand. That's a ksil. Okay, it says. Then after that we have the part in the Haggadah Yachomi Rosh Chodesh, right? I might think that you should start saying the Haggadah from Rosh Chodesh. Tamu Lomar No Bayomahu Ibayomahu Yachomi Bod Yom. I'm thinking an Erev Pesach in the daytime. Tamu Lomar No Bavurzeh Lomar Tila B'Shash Yesh Matzah Mor Munachim Lefanav. That you have to say the Haggadah when there's Matzah and Mor in front of you. So he said a very interesting thing. He says that when Galinsky was here, their shita that they learned from the Vardak was to spread Torah. So he decided to take a group and to start a yeshiva, whatever, in Chadera, right, where there was not too much Torah at the time. And fine. So that was okay at the beginning, but then, you know, it happens very often with people that go out to these places, that's what happens with your kids, you know. So he had like some little girls or whatever, and they had to start going to Gan or whatever. So where is he going to go to Gan? So since the areas there was not from people so much, so the only Gan that was available for a kindergarten for the kids, the girls, was a was one that was not Haredi. It was like called Mesorati, right? And they
wasn't even B'nai Akiva.
No, and the children they came from non-religious homes. The kids actually came from non-religious homes, so you didn't know. What should we? Or was it okay to send their kids to such a gan, such a kindergarten? So he knew what to do. So he went to the Chazon Ish, and I told him the problem. We don't know. Want to know? Is it okay? Should we not send our kids to this gan? So he said, interestingly enough, he didn't, what point did the Chazon Ish, deal with? He said he didn't think he would ask, okay, exactly what types of homes do these kids come from? What do they do at home? How do they dress? How do their mothers dress? He said, no, he didn't ask that. He didn't get involved with all these different things. What did he ask? He asked the following question. He said, in the kindergarten, okay, what type of pictures are on the walls? That's what the Chazon Ish asked. What are the pictures on the walls in the garden? So he said, I told them that, I don't know, pictures of Bambi, and rabbits, and, things like, pastoral pictures, So the Chazon Ish said to me, he says, if the kindergarten teacher, the Gananet, if she'll agree to put up pictures of Gedolim on the wall, he says, then fine, then you can send your kids there. So what happened? He said. So I asked the Gananet. I said, "Okay, we want to put pictures of Gedolim on the wall." So she said, "No, nothing doing." So that was it. We packed up. We left. And went back to B'nai Brak. Left Khadera. So he said. So what do we see from here? That the what's very important in the Chinuch Chadera is it's the surroundings around. It's one thing what you teach there, but very important is the surroundings. And here is, if you have surroundings of a Gedolim, a picture of the ground, okay. So Mele, he says, that's also what we see over here. That here we're telling over Sipri Sias Mitzrayim, but the surroundings are important. And therefore, what does it say? That when you say, Lo Amarti, Ela B'Shash, Ish Matzah Umar, or Munachim L'Fanach. Not enough just to say the Sipur, you have to have the Matzah and the Mar there. The surroundings are very important. Okay. Says the mitchila ovde avodah zara yuvaseinu. Right, so we say this is Chazal tell us more in Psachim Kuftan Zayin that we begin matchil begenut misayim b'shvach. So we start off on the negative note, how we used to be ovde avodah zara, etc., and then we Hashem was mekarav, etc. So he says that he has an old friend that lives now in Antwerp. But he was together with him in Siberia, when he was in Siberia. And every now and then, he says, when I bump into him, we're schmoozing. So any time I raise the topic of Siberia, he says, no, don't talk about that. You can talk about anything, but just don't talk about that. It makes me sad, and what happened then, I don't want to talk about that. So he said, I'll tell him, I said, Lafech, I don't want to talk about it. He said, Lafech, it shouldn't make you sad. You should be happy that Baruch Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu, saved us from the Tsars, we got out and we're alive and, serving him, and we should make you happy. We should be thankful to Kodesh Baruch Hu. No, don't want to talk about it. So he says, which I heard very recently, a little different touch to it. And just very recently, it's interesting. So he brings there was a maisa there was once a shoemaker, sandlar, and a simple, poor shoemaker. And as things had it, his luck turned for the good, and he became a very, very wealthy man. Yerusha, whatever it was, and he became a very wealthy man. So he was Zocha to marry off his daughter. This is the version I heard, not exactly the version he says here, but he was Zocha to marry off his daughter to the Rav's son. You know, he had the schus marrying the Rav's son. You know, fine. So came the night of the chasana and the chuppah, kind of everything. So right there, right after the kedushin, soon whatever, and all of a sudden, one of the people in the crowd, or another wealthy man, comes up, holding his shoes in his hand, and comes up to me and says to the father of the bride, you know, and says, "Here, can you fix my shoes? They need a little repair." You know, I want to embarrass him, like to remind him of it. He used to be a shoe repair, you know, fix your shoes. Can you fix my right in front of everybody? So the version I heard was the guy was so embarrassed that the guy just fainted and he died eventually from it. Ad kedei kach. He just died. So they say that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, this maisa is what started him on the Muslim movement. Right? When he saw what happened to this guy, you know, embarrassed him, and you know, and he died from it. He said, "We have to start a Muslim movement." And that's what Chagim started Muslim. So the version I heard, the question, and we'll get back to Rav Galinsky in a second, but is that they asked what, because of one Meshuggah, you start this Muslim movement. Okay, fine. This guy was crazy, you know, embarrassed him, you know, and okay, the guy shouldn't embarrass. Well, because of that, you start a whole Muslim movement for one guy. What's this? How beautiful Terrace says. No, he didn't start the Musar movement because of that guy. You know, says, "Hey, look at my shoes." He started the Musar movement because of the guy that fainted and died. That's why he started the movement. Like, how? What's okay? So the guy showed you that you died from that. You died from there. Look at all the good that you have. Look at the, you know, Baruch Hashem, you became rich and you marry your daughter after their son Zerah. So who cares what the guy says? You die because of that? Is that gonna make such an impression on you what people have to say? Look at me, thankful of everything that happened. So he said, that's why I started the Muslim movement, because the guy that died, not because of the guy that embarrassed him. Because unfortunately, we're all like that. Instead of looking at the good and all the good things that Kosh Baruch said, we zero in on the bad. Oh, look what he did to me. Why should that affect? That's why he started the Muslim movement. So he says, a little bit along those lines, but he says, similarly over here, the guy embarrassed him or whatever, and he took it so hard, etc. And he should have, again, you know, like we said, should have been happy of everything that, you know, when the guy showed him the shoes, you could have said, "Wow, you know, you're right. I used to be a poor guy, and oh, Hashem, look at me now, and Hashem, what he did for me," and it should, you know, make you happy. It should make you happy, not sad. And, you know, so like, same with the guy, what he was trying to tell him with the guy from Siberia. You know, what are you sad about? Be happy. Look at Baruch Hashem, you're alive and well, everything's good. Look what Hashem did for you. Look at the good side. Look at, right? So he just ends on very nice. He says, so why is it that people, they don't look at the good, you know, they don't, don't remind me of, they don't look at the good, they want to, you know, that the Kosh Baruch Hu does and stuff. He says the answer is because people know that if they accept the good and give thanks to Hashem, that makes them a Baal Chov, that makes them a Chayev, right? Hashem did all this for, Hashem did all this for me, so I owe him a lot. And people don't want to, Kosh Baruch Hu, because of that, that's why they don't tell me everything good Hashem does for me, I don't want to know about it. Because if he does, then I'm going to have to give him in return, that I don't want to do. So that's it.
It's
a cute mice, so I'll just interrupt with this mice. there was once a priest, a comer or whatever, in Prague, and he constantly wanted to get the king to go against the do bad things against the Yidden, you know, because there is against him, whatever. So he decided to convince the king that they should have a vikuach, a debate Okay, says I'll debate to any bone of the yidden, and we'll do it by the bridge by the river. Okay, and the whoever will not be able to answer the other one's question, he'll be thrown into the river. That's the thing. Okay, fine. So the king agreed, and they told the yidden, okay, we're going to have a debate, and whoever doesn't want to answer the question has to get thrown in the river. Okay, so the Rav, you know, declared a fast day or whatever, and what to do. So the Eglon, the local wagon driver, he said to the Rav, send me, I can take care of it. Send me, I'll take care of it. So the Rav says, you sure? Well, he goes, what are you going to do? You know, he says, don't worry, maximum, okay, if he wins, he throws me, I'm just saying, you know, then what are you going to do? You're going to go, Rav, that's what Shlomo, you don't answer, you're going to get thrown in the river, we need you, okay, me, I'm just saying, a lot of the wagon drivers around. Rav says, you sure? Yeah, fine. So he sends. Okay, so the everybody's there watching this big debate, and the so this wagon driver is standing there, and for the Jewish side, and the Komer comes in, for the priest comes in. The Komer says, you know, and this guy says, okay, here you start. Ask me any question. And, you know, what can he possibly ask? He can't answer. You know, ask me any question. So he says, okay. So the Yid asks the Komer. He says, "What? Can you please explain to me the following expression?" He says, "Yeah, what's that?" Expression is "lo yadati perusho." What does that mean? "Lo yadati," I don't know that it's perish. "Lo yadati perusho." Can you please explain that to me? So he says, "Sure." So he answers him, "Eini yodea ma perush." He goes, you don't know what the perush? Into the river. That was the end of it. So what's it? He told him, I don't know what the perush. Into the river. That was the end of the debate. Jews won. So they came back to the Rav, and Rav came up to the wagon guy. He says, "Wow, that's unbelievable! That's brilliant." He said, "How did you come up with such a brilliant idea?" So he goes, "Oh, brilliant idea! I'll tell you." He said, "I know I'm a simpleton. I don't, you know, and I learned chumash. I learned with a Yiddish teich. You know, they teich up the words. You know, explain the words in Yiddish. Then, because I don't understand, you know, the explanation of the actual, you know, Hebrew. So I had a really Yiddish, you know, translation, right?" So anyway, so I was learning, and I got in Parshas Tezria, there's a Rashi over there, right? And there's on the Pasuk, V'amok ein mareha mina or, so if you look at Rashi there, Rashi says, lo yadati perusho. Right? Rashi writes there, I don't know the perush. Lo yadati perusho. So I looked in the translation, and the translator wrote, eini yodea ma perush. I don't know what the perush is. He's translating Rashi. So I figured, he says, well, if the translator didn't know what Rashi said, so and he's a smart guy, I figured the Comer's not going to know either. He also didn't know. Okay. Fine. It says...
this is his famous debate.
There's a lot of famous debates.
What's his name?
That was an odd. There's
a Jew
who turned to. So it says in the pasuk, Baruch Hagadah says, Baruch Shem Raftacho Baruch Hu, Shekadosh Baruch Hu Chishev Ata Keis Laslos Kama Shneimar Lavram Avinu Bevis Ben Mitzrayim Shneimar Bayomer Lavram Yadoa Teda Kigeri Yezachar Beeres Wolahem Abamiot Shana Etc. So the Gemara says that. In the Gemara Nedarim, the Aflamid Beis says that since Avram Avinu asked the question, Hashem Elokim Ba'mai Daki Yirashena, he asked Hashem, when Hashem said that the priest of Ben Abisarim that they're going to inherit, so they said, how am I going to know Ba'mai Daki Yirashena? Hashem says, okay, since you asked the question, you're going to be punished, and it says Yadoa Teda Gigir Yezaracha, etc. You should know that your children are going to be in a strange land or whatever, etc. 400 years, and that was the gezerah of Galus Mitzrayim. So he said, of course, there's a lot of depth in what's involved over here. He says, but on a very simple level, we see from here that it's not kedai to ask questions. You know, Moshe, if Avraham Avinu would have been quiet, and Hashem would say, you know, says, okay, they're on Herod, they would have been quiet, fine. Because he started asking questions. Oh yeah, but man, how do I know? Oh, you're starting to ask questions, they're punishment. So he says, good. He says, once a Yid from Haifa said to me the following. It says that Avraham Avinu was commanded at the Akedah, Kachnas Bincha, right, to take your son, Hashem said to Avraham. So what did Avraham say? He asked, he said, wait, Shnei Banim Ali, you know, I have two sons, I have Yitzhak, Ishmael, you know, which one? What do you mean, your son? Which son? So then Hashem said, yes, Yechidcha, your only son. So he says, well, both sons are only sons to their mother, you know, to Sarah, to Hagar, they're each only son to their mother. So he said, Asher Ahavta, he says, the one you love. So Avraham says, well, I love both of them, I have Yitzhak and Ishmael, I love both of them. So then he said, Es Yitzchak. So finally he said, okay, Es Yitzchak, and tell you a farish, and take him, bring him up as an Ola. So he says, if Avraham Avinu wouldn't have asked any questions, and as soon as Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, take your son, he would have just taken Ishmael and put him on the Mizbeach and then offered him up, we wouldn't have had the problem with the Arabs today. So Abu Qazi started asking questions. Which son? Well, until Hashem said, oh, you're asking? Okay, fine, yes, sir. Oh, you just wouldn't have asked questions. Take Ishmael, finish. So see here, that it's not always good to ask, so that's too many questions.
Well, but I thought okay. Hashem didn't want Ishmael on the Mizbeach.
Right, that's because he asked, but he wouldn't have asked him. He said, your son, fine, take a son and finish. Okay, he says, I was once asked, he said, a serious question. It says that Esav, okay, he chose to go to Seir in order that he didn't have to pay this called the Priyas Shtar of Shibud Mitzrayim. He knew that, as we saw, that he didn't have to be in to go down to Mitzrayim and be slaves, etc. And but that was that's to pay off the debt so we can get the Torah, which we got the Torah afterwards. So Esav said, thank you, but no thanks. I don't want the payback. I don't want the Torah. And he said, I'm going to Seir. You can go to Mitzrayim. I don't want to go to Mitzrayim. I don't want to go through the sheep. Fine. So he went to Seir, and instead Yaakov and his children, they went down and they paid back the chov by going down to Mitzrayim, and then got the Torah as a reward. So we see over here, he says, that without going through the Shibud, you can't be zochet to the Torah, right? That was Esav didn't want it. I don't want the Shibud, I want the Torah. But in order to get the Torah, you have to go through the Shibud. Esav didn't want it. Yaakov said, fine, I'll take it. And he did. So he asked a good question. He said, if that's the case, how could it be, he says, that Shevet Levi, right, they didn't work in Mitzrayim. So if a prerequisite for getting the Torah is going through the Shibud, and then that's what, you know, Esav didn't want that. So how could Levi, who didn't go through Shibud, how could they get the Torah? How would Zohar they get Mandar? Not only that, they were even the, you know, they're Shevet Levi, they were even closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu than everybody else even. How could it be when they didn't go through the Shibud? So he answers with the Chazal, Zohar, that says, when it says in the Torah they were in Mitzrayim and they went through Bavoda Kasha, Bechomer, or Vilvanim. So the Zohar says, what's Avoda Kasha? Elu Kushios Belimin Torah. This is, Avoda Kasha is Lashon Kashas. Kashas in Torah. And what's Chomer? Kalva Chomer. Meaning Kalva Chomer is, and what's Levenim? Libun Halacha. To clarify the Halacha. Meaning. So, for it is, says that when a Kodesh Baruch Hu goes there, whatever, sets him Yisurin for a person, the person has to go through a certain amount of Yisurin for whatever reason, the punishment, to cleanse him, whatever it might be. So he has to go through, you know, a lot of effort and whatever it might be, hard work, suffering. However, Hashem doesn't always tell us how. In other words, sometimes we have a choice of how to go through the suffering. We can choose. In other words, it says, Adam lamu yulad ashri misham lo batorah. Right, the Chazal tell us that a person has to work hard, but happy is the one that works hard in Torah. It's another Midrash Yalkut. It says, "Ein lecha adam below yisurin." Everybody has to suffer. Okay, Shchoshesh. This guy has a toothache, can't fall asleep, suffering, can't fall asleep. This guy has eyes hurt him. Choshesh beina veini achol lishon. He can't sleep, and this guy is osek in Torah and he can't fall asleep. Right? So they're all suffering. The guy with the toothache, with the eye pains, and with the guy learning Torah. Okay? But Ashrei Hagever Ashrei Yisrael Nukami Torah Chalom. Then happy is the person that is suffering to the Torah. Why? Because he's also paying off his debt by suffering through the learning. But he is also getting the tremendous mitzvah and schar and olam haba and everything on top of it. Whereas the guy that has a toothache, okay, he's getting his kapar with that, with the suffering, but he's not going to get tremendous schar for it. He's just suffering a toothache. So therefore, you can choose. Hashem's not going to give you more suffering than you deserve. Suffering is suffering. You can choose and just have a toothache, or you can say, no, I'd rather learn Torah and suffer that way. It's also suffering, then I don't have to suffer the toothache. It's up to you. You can choose. So Mela, so too with Shevet Levi, right? Yes, you have to suffer in order to get the Torah. But they said, you know, why suffer with the actual bricks and the thing? We'll suffer learning. We'll take the suffering that way. And that's what they did. And then they, as we said, that they benefited not only that they were able to go through the suffering that way, but they're also zoicha, that they came very close to Kosh Baruch Hu through that because they were busy learning instead of working. So you can, it's up to you. You can suffer this way, suffer that way. It's your choice is yours. So a very nice mashal that explains this. And he says, I heard this as a kid, the story. He said there was a guy that went to the port when the ships come in, right? And he was watching the ships going in and out. And these were like ships with schoira, you know. So he saw the merchandise. He saw the ship come in, and they take off these things full of wheat and this, you know, take it off. Okay. All of a sudden, he sees something very strange. See, there's a ship there, you know, parked at the side, and the crew are loading it up with rocks. It's very strange, you know. Okay, see, there's different merchandise in it, but filling it up with rocks. Look at these rocks and putting the rocks into the ship. So I says, what are they, nuts? So he goes over to the guy in charge of the ship, the captain, whatever. He says, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you, but I don't understand what I'm seeing over here. Why would you put rocks on the ship? So he says, well, he says, you have to understand. He says, a ship has to have a certain amount of weight to it, right? Otherwise, if it goes totally empty, it's very dangerous because it has to be like into the sea, a certain amount of, you know, meters into the sea in order, like the weight in order to be sturdy, okay? And I'm not, didn't bring merchandise here. I'm going to bring merchandise to import merchandise from another place. So my ship has to go out and get the merchandise. On the way there, if there's going to be nothing in the ship, it's too light. It's dangerous. So we have to fill it up with rocks in order to give it weight, to weigh it down a little bit so it'll have a safe journey. Then we get rid of the rocks. So I put the merchandise on and come back. So he says, what do we see from here? That it's got to be filled up with something. If it can be filled up with merchandise, good stuff, you fill up with rocks. He says so too. He says, Chisurin, a person has to suffer. But you have two choices. You can have suffering through the Torah and suffering, or take your suffering that way. Or you can take the suffering other ways. But suffering's gotta happen, it's gotta be. It's either this way or that way. It's good stuff or bad stuff.
Or your head is always filled with something.
That's true. Let's hope not rocks. Okay. It's fine. It says Vavadum Vinu Osam Arbameyot Shana. So there's a chazal that says that Paro got rewarded when he escorted Avraham four amos when he sent him out of Mitzrayim. He ushered Avraham Vinu out four amos, and he was rewarded for that. That in the future, the Jewish people are going to be his slaves for 400 years. That he sent four amos out. It was his reward. So we see, he says from here, two things. One thing we see, that the tremendous schar, you know, for a mitzvah, that why didn't the little thing he did, walk up, escorted Abraham out, this is a tremendous 400 years of slavery was coming to him, you know, because of that little thing. Seen a tremendous schar. But we also see that the schar for Rishayim is, though, paid, but in this world. And whereas for the tzaddikim is lasi lavo, so he got the payment, tremendous schar, but only in this world. Whereas tzaddikim get their reward in the next world. So he brings that a mice. He says it happened with himself that when the war broke out. So he said the yeshiva left. He was in Poland, whatever, came to Lita, and it wasn't long when the Russians came in and they captured the country and they asked Limud Torah, etc. So he had the danger. He was a refugee from Poland, and the Russians there, you know, everybody had to work, and he just wanted to learn. So one day, sure enough, they was walking the street or whatever, and the police came up to him and said, "What do you do? Where are you working? You don't have a job?" So he goes, "No, you have to work." So I said, "Uh-oh." So I was afraid of, and they took me, said, to some factory where they sew socks, like for wool and socks, you know, for the army or whatever. So they brought me in. They said, "Okay." They sat me down next to like a sewing machine, and they said, "You have to sew straight line on the seam over here, the sock lip." Okay, so I sat down and I got the machine, you know, going strong, and then the needle broke. So the manager came over and he goes, "What's going on?" So I said, "I can't sew, the needle broke." So he goes, needle says, "Okay." He says, "You have to take it easy, you know, be careful. These are very expensive needle, and you know, just take it easy. You have to, can't go so fast. You go fast, it breaks the needle." So he says, "Ah," thought to himself, "Oh, very good." Okay. So then put in a new needle, and the brace. Calling, like, "What's going on?" Anyways, I went through, he said, like 12, 13 needles that day. Okay. So after the Menahel calls me in, and at the end of the day, and he says, "So listen," he says, "I'm getting rid of you. Here, I'll pay you 2 weeks in advance salary. Just don't come." Okay, I'll tell the authorities that you're here. I'll you know, no problem, don't worry. And but just take the money and go. So he said to them, "Oh, thank you." But he says, "I don't understand. So I was talking to the other workers over here, and everybody's complaining that you never pay them. Right? You haven't paid them in months, and you always tell them because of the war and this and that. So, but I understand. How can me? You know, you're paying me ahead of time, and you're saying, well, I don't understand." He says, "It's very simple." He says, "These people, my workers, they're good workers. I want to keep them. If I'm going to give them money, let's take the money and go. Right? So in order to keep them, I have to hold back their wages. So they want to get paid. I'm going to pay them all, but I'll just wait, you know, just to keep them." Right? He said, "But you, it's the hefech. You're destroying, you're ruining everything. You're breaking all my needles. You're costing me a lot of money. I don't want you here. So the hefech, if I pay you, you're going to leave. Good, take the money and go. Just get out of here." Right? She says so too. He says that Nimshal says that's what the tzaddikim and the rishayim, right? That's Hashem wants the tzaddikim. He wants them, so therefore he keeps them around. He doesn't pay them back yet. At the end, he'll pay him all the salary. Unless he loves them. Why was it the Russians the other way around? He says, "Get out of here! I don't want you." So he pays them all in this world. Just get them out. Okay. Says that Shebechol Dor Vador Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloseinu. So he says, why? What's one of the reasons why are they so the Goyim hate us so much? So the he brings another Maisa that there was a Rav and he was speaking to this community and he was telling them how. It's important to do, you know, tzedakah. It's a very chashuv mitzvah and everything. But he said, "But I understand that there's many people here, they don't have the means. And so there's something else called chesed. And there's gemilas chesed, even in certain respects, greater than tzedakah, because it's bein lanim, bein lashirim. You can help, you don't have to only help poor people, help rich people also. Helping poor people with chesed is a mitzvah for rich also, and etc., etc." He's telling him all that. So he said it means, you know, doing chesed, helping people whenever you can, different ways. You know, you have to use your imagination, and you can. It's a big mitzvah. So there's one simpleton there, you know, was listening to the Rav, and he had an idea. He was thinking, "How can I do chesed? I don't have much money. How can I do chesed?" So he said, "Ah, he had an idea that he goes around, you know, whatever, selling things, whatever, and is with his horse and buggy. And he when he comes back, it's already dark. It's already nighttime when he returns after a long day's work. So he has a lantern that, you know, to light the way so he can, you know, when he comes home. So he had an idea that he's going to leave the lantern on all night, in the street, you know, where he parks his buggy, so that it'll be like a street light, so people can have light on the street when they're going back and, you know, traveling at night a little bit. People walk whenever they're able to see where they're going. They won't fall into pits and that, whatever. Help the people out a little bit. Like, give a little street light. So, you know, that's a chesed and something he could do, you know. So he went to the Rav and told him his plan. The Rav said, you know, Ashrecha, wonderful, that's a tremendous thing. And, okay, great. So sure enough, the next day, he come and arrives home at night and he loads up his lantern with extra oil to burn all night. Leaves it all happy, he's doing a big mitzvah. He comes, wakes up the next morning, and he goes out to his wagon, and he sees his lantern all smashed. Smashed, broken, and the glass all over, the oil's all over, it's all broken. And he's all upset. He says, well, you know, he says, well, what's going on over here? You know, you weren't doing a mitzvah, and then what happened? So he went to the Rav, and he said, I don't understand. So he said, the Rav said, first of all, just you know, calm you down a little bit. You should realize that even if you, says the Chazal, tell, if you plan to do a mitzvah and something happens and you're nana, you couldn't do it, you get the scars if you did the mitzvah. So don't worry, you'll get scars for your intent. Why did this happen? He says, I'll tell you why it happened, the Rav told him. He said, because it's true that you want to do a wonderful chesed for people, they have light, and then, however, there's other people in the street also at night. Who's that? The Ganavim. Right? They don't like light. Right? They work in the dark. Light, you know, in light, the people will see them. So, the Stama, what happened was, the Ganavim saw the light, they smashed it, because they, you know, they don't like the light in the street. And they're the ones that destroyed it. And, that's the way it goes. She says, so too, that the Torah is near mitzvah Torah or, right? The Torah is a light. So it's a beautiful thing, it's a wonderful thing, but that's for, you know, people that use it properly. But the Goyim and others that, you know, they don't like the light. They don't like it because, you know, they're jealous of it, etc. So they want to get rid of it. So that's the idea of a Chol Dor Vador, Amdim Aleinu L'Chalaseinu. Okay. After this, it says, "Say ulmad ma bikesh lavan aramim lasos liyakov avina." So it's very nice. The smicha is between the two things. The chol dor vador omdim aleinu chalosein. They want to wipe us out every generation, and then say ulmad, come and see what Lavan wanted to do to Yaakov. So what's the connection? He said, because we read shabachol dor v'lam chalosein. One might ask and say it's not true. Right, there are Dorot generations when the Goyim are very nice to us and stuff. They don't want to destroy us, whatever. So what do you mean? Shechol Dor V'Dor Omdim Aleinu L'Chalosein. They want to wipe us out every generation. It's not true. So to answer that comes the next paragraph. Say Ulmad Ma Bikesh Lavan Arami Lasos Yaakov. Right, what happened? The Paro Lo Gazar El Azcharim Lavan Bikesh Lakor Shakol. What's pshat? That Paro wanted to physically kill us. Terrible. However, by Laban it was even worse. Because what did Laban want? He didn't want to kill physically Yaakov. He just wanted Yaakov to stay around a long time. Here, stay here, where you're going, right? You're running away. You know, he wanted to stay. Why? Because he figured eventually they'll assimilate. You know, as long as he's in Chutzlar, it's with all the things going on there, they'll eventually assimilate and that'll be the end of the Jewish people. Right? So therefore, yeah, b'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu. Sometimes they want to physically kill us. Other times, when things are good, that doesn't mean that everything's fine. They also want to wipe us out in a different way, by assimilation. Like we see, you know, the things are good in America, other places in Europe, but the assimilation is terrible. Right? As the end of it, you can destroy the Jewish people that way also. So, b'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu. They don't want to kill us. Yeah, other ways, like we see by Lavan, say ulman, go and learn what Lavan, that's what he wanted to do. That's what also, that's b'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu.
Lavan was worse than him?
I'm sorry?
You said Lavan was worse than him.
Para. Mm-hmm. It says that b'shivi nefesh, we came down to Mitzrayim. So Chazal say that Yaakov had 70 people in his family, and they calls him Nefesh in a single lashon, Nefesh Yachi. Whereas Esav had 6, and it says Nafshos Beso, says Lashon Rabim. Why? Why by Yaakov is Nefesh, even though it was 70, and by Esav is only 6, and already calls him Nefashot, plural. So he brings a Maisa, it's a famous Maisa. There was this Austrian Caesar came to the Rav of the country. His name is Rav Shimshon Wertheimer. And He said that the Komrim, the priests are always bugging me. You know, they're saying that, you know, why do these Jewish people think they're the chosen people? What makes them so great? And this and that. So can you somehow clear up the situation over here? Show it, prove it, whatever you can do. So he says, yeah, no problem. So what does he do? He sets up a suda, a table, and he puts some nice food, fruit or whatever, in the middle of the table. Okay, and then he called in a bunch of goyim from the street, and he said, sat everybody down. He says, okay, nobody's to touch the food right now. Nobody's to touch the food. He said, and then he says, okay, now I want you to. Everybody has to, eat the food here, but you're not allowed to use your hands. Use your hands. So how do we get to eat? Just 1 second. So they brought in these huge forks with these long, long, long handles with it. And they put it down next to everybody. And they said, okay, now you can eat, but you can only use the forks. You can't use your hand. So they said, everybody sat there. Well, how can I use it? I can't eat. It's impossible. So they sat there. Okay, they left. So then they called in a bunch of Yidden. And they said, okay, same thing. You have to eat the food. No hands, only the forks. They said, okay, no problem. They took the fork, stuck it in the food, and served the guy across the other side of the table with it. Everybody did so, and then they cleaned up the food. So he said, this is the chosen people, right? We're all like one. We care about each other like we care about ourselves. Right? That's why Yaakov Avinu, it's Shivim Nefesh, because we're all like one. Whereas by the Goyim, a bunch of Nefesh, everybody cares for themselves, and we care about the other person. So that's what makes us special. One last thing. It's very interesting. I was thinking about this question. This week or something. And remember, I saw it here. I was like, wow. So it says like this: that the pasuk it says in the thing in the Haggadah, "Shayu Yisrael Mitzuyanim Sham." So it says they were Mitzuyanim, that they didn't change their clothing or their language, etc. So he brings here that the other Chazal, that Bishus Nashim Tzidkaniyos Nigalu Mimitzrayim. Right, we were redeemed from Egypt because in the schus of the women. Now, how, in what way were the women greater than the men? He says because they were very careful in sneas. He says one example we see in their what they wore. It says that when they had to borrow the things from the Egyptians, it says they had to borrow clay kesef u clay zahavu smalot, right, gold and silver, and smalot, like dresses. And put it on your children. He says, why put it on your children? Why put it on them? So he said, it is because the dresses were too short. They're like mini skirts, it's not sneistic. So they can put it on their little kids, because you put a mini skirt for an adult, it goes down to the ankles for the kid. So mainly they put the smalot on the children. That's what they do, but not on themselves, because it's not sneist. Okay, so he says a Gvaltik word. He says that I once went into the Chazanish, and coming out of him was Rav Avram Yosef Wolf. There's a famous seminar in Seminar Wolf in Bnei Brak. So he was the starter of it, and he was coming out, and I asked him, what's doing? So he says, listen to this. He says, I went into Chazanish and I had a question. Said what? Says that the Gemara says in Kedushin Daf Lamed that the Kodesh Baruch Hu created the Yetzer Hara, Barati Yetzer Hara, Barati Torah Tavli, and the antidote of the Yetzer Hara is the Torah. And Mesilas Yesharim says in Perek Gimel that there's nothing else that to go against the Torah, since Hashem created the Yetzer Hara. So Hashem, only He knows what is the antidote, and He tells us that it's the Torah. You need the Torah to go against the Yetzer Hara. So he said, so I asked him, well, what about women? Right? If the antidote to the Yetzer Hara is the Torah, and learning Torah, but women don't have a mitzvah learning Torah, so what are they supposed to do with the Yetzer Hara? So he answered, and he says that the way the women can control the Yetzer Hara, he says, is by Shmira al Gidrei Atzniut, by guarding their tznius, by being tznua. That is their way, the woman's way of protecting herself from the Yetzer, of overcoming the Yetzer Hara. Mimele, in Mitzrayim, they didn't receive the Torah yet. didn't receive a Torah yet. So therefore, the men didn't have the means to go against the Yetzer Hara. But the women, their way of going against the Yetzer Hara, don't need the Torah per se, it's the Tznias. And as we say, they were very Tznias in Mitzrayim. Mimela, they were able to overcome the Yetzer, etc., because they had Tznias in Mitzrayim. The men couldn't, because they didn't have the Torah yet. So that's why, Bishkut Nashim Tzidkaniyos Nigalum Mitzrayim. That's why we're in Mitzrayim, because it's supposed to